Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Real Sports Guys Talk Radio, where real guys talk real sports. And over the past couple weeks, it's been a couple of us back and forth, but the crew is back. We got Ray in the house, Marcus in the house, Devon. You're Real Sports Guys Talk Radio. If you want to call in and join us, feel free, 347-989-0844. That's 347-989-0844. You can also hit us up on Facebook as well. But tonight we're going to talk about it all. It's good to have the crew back. You know, it's like football season is around the corner. Tomorrow is the kickoff for Hard Knocks, so we're going to talk about the Jets and what's happening there. So it's going to be a dose of football this hour, but we also talk about baseball as well, whatever is there. If you want to join the conversation, get on here and get around the table. Fellas, welcome back. What y'all want to talk about, Ray, Marcus? Throw something out there. What do you guys want to do? Welcome back.
You know, I want to hit on, you know, you brought up the Jets and Hard Knocks and everything, and I want to hit on the idea that, like, you may have the best cover corner that we've seen in quite some time, because I think for a while people were saying, like, the cover corner was a dead thing, like the guy who could take away half the field. They were saying that was an extinct breed of football player. Well, Darrell Revis came back, and in the last 2 years, he's proven that now that guy still does exist. But now we may not be able to watch this dude play for the next year. He's at a point where they're talking seriously about him sitting out a whole season, and that's just crazy to me. I mean, and not only is it crazy to me just from a fan perspective that, like, this dude is not going to play. And so that's going to affect, you know, you have a team that's contending for the Super Bowl and the Jets in New York.
In a new stadium.
Yeah, in a new stadium, and you got the best player on the defensive side of the ball saying that he's not going to play. That changes the dynamic of Super Bowl contending, you know, as much as the quarterback that we won't name, you know, retiring and unretiring over and over, you know. So it's just real interesting, like, you know, and it's a gamble because he's doing this. He's threatening not to play the year before a possible lockout. So he could walk away. I mean, there's a lot of ways that this could play out. This is going to get real interesting. And, you know, because it's New York, I'm sure it's going to get a ton of coverage. But this is going to be interesting to watch how it plays out.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it is there, you know, from the Jets' perspective, you know, he wants to be the highest paid player, and I think the organization has said, you know, we believe you're the best player, but we can't pay the price for Oakland's bad decision, right? And so it's one of those things where they do have the standoff. You know, if he doesn't report tomorrow, you know, he's going to lose. He's going to take a hit towards his free agency. That $20 million, what he's promised, what, in 2 years, he's going to take a hit from that. So he's taking, you know, and his uncle or cousin? Is it Gilbert?
Sean Gilbert.
So, you know, he's taking cues from there. But the fact of the matter, man, you hit it right on the head that this ain't the same situation that
right.
he was in. You know, with an uncapped year, then a possible lockout, that's a lot of money you losing. And so the only thing he got going for him is, I remember someone was saying today, you know, if he gets the kind of the Emmitt Smith treatment. Remember, Emmitt Smith sucked them first two games, and when the Cowboys lost the first two games, you know, Jerry Jones was basically like, you know, we got to make a deal.
Hey, you win.
But if the Jets come out and go 2-0, now that puts more pressure on Revis. And so this is a real gamble for him because he could lose a lot of money.
Yeah.
You haven't seen a player of this magnitude hold out. So, you until you really see it, you have to take it for what it is. I can understand him wanting his money, and I think they'll come together with some kind of contract that'll, you know, satisfy everybody. But, you know, you're right. If he sits out and loses that kind of money, you have to question a lot of things at that point.
Yeah, I'm about to slap somebody in my camp. You know, I'd love you, but, you know, you cost me $20 million now. I'm listening to you. You cost me $20 million. You know, $20 million in hand is better than, you know. So I think he is really pushing up on something. He's in a tough position because as a corner, Rex Ryan is a great defensive coordinator. So there's some stuff I can scheme, and it's not like he doesn't have any corners.
Right.
No, he don't have Revis.
They got a good. I mean, with him, they have an amazing set of corners.
Yeah.
Without him, they still got a top 10 set of corners with Cromartie,
right.
And then they drafted a kid.
Yep. So they can scheme, you know, to cover for that. It's not like if you don't have Emmitt Smith, right? You know, you can't really scheme for that.
Yeah.
But you can scheme for not having him. You might get a little more help over the top, you know. So he's a great defensive coordinator, and he's done that with less quality at defensive back. So I think that's the chance that he's taken is that, you know, if they figure out how to play without him, then his whole chips are out. You know, he out there with no money, you know, out there in the wind.
Yeah, it's gonna be a real interesting situation because, you know, he's really rolling the dice.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's say he does sit out this year, then they call his bluff and say, well, go ahead and sit out. We'll just make it work without you, man.
That's right.
And there's a different contract structure the next year, you know, or different, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be trying to get a new deal under a totally different set of parameters next year that he's totally unaware of what those parameters are going to be.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And so he's going to be bargaining in a new world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Does he want to take that gamble? I don't know. I don't know if I can do that, you know? And I think you hit it on the head talking about he may have to slap somebody in his crew. You know, these advisory crews, man, getting out of hand.
We need to do a show just on you cannot have a crew like Entourage talking to you about your money. It's
no.
Just like
Johnny Jones cannot make your financial decisions.
Well, you know, you understand somebody that's getting 10%, but,
yeah.
You know, that's You go out and you hire the best you can. You know, you give somebody worthy of 10%, that 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But taking advice from somebody that may have sat out in on a negotiation isn't like somebody who's – it ain't Rosenthal, you know.
That's right.
It ain't Rosenthal.
That's right. I think that's the struggle that hit. Yeah.
And when you make a power move like this, you have the nastiest agent in the world. That's – you don't – you know. Like LaBelle said, you come with Pookie from around the corner. You know, you gotta come with somebody strong.
Yeah. Don't pull a Ricky Williams. Do not let Master P cut your deal.
Right.
I do not recommend that as best practice.
You have to, you know, get some hardball players and play it if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, the only shot he has, really, is injury. At the corner position, where they really need to make a move. But if they go 2-0, then that's really going to put some pressure on him.
Yeah, if they come out the gate winning,
yeah.
He's effed.
Yeah, he's done.
Ain't no other way to put it. He's done. I mean, like, there go your bargaining chips, man.
Because he done leaked it, and the owner's like, oh, so you're going to put me in the corner, so I'm really going to come out here. Woody's like, I'm really going to come out here and be salty right now. So you're going to try and play me. Because they already renegotiated with him when he held out before. So they saying, look, you started playing lately, but we overpaid you before you got good. Now you got good. Now, yeah, we underpaying you, but let's honor this going forward. That's where the guaranteed contracts for the NFL are going to be a real issue. Because that's how you stop
it's
it.
Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. The owners, the only way the owners will do that is if they get short contracts, if they can get short contracts.
Yep.
So if the max contract is 4 years, mm-hmm. then the owners may go for guaranteed contracts.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be a hard sell because, yeah, it gives them, you know, yeah, they got to put up with this,
mm-hmm.
but then they also can cut the dead weight, the guy who's underproducing. They can get rid of him right away,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a luxury that as a sport the NFL has, and it helps maintain parity.
Yeah.
You know, it helps maintain that parity that the NFL has been able to achieve where everybody's in it because basically, you know, you got guys who you got to play.
Yes.
You got to play. Right. It's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that it's a tough position for these folks to be in. Yeah, you got to look at shorter deals or something or something where you have maybe an arbitrator system where if there is an injury or somewhere else, there's someone can – some point there can be a discussion about a contract with an arbitrator, something that allows both sides to have some leverage, you know, if there's something that happens, if people outperform the contract or if people underperform and a team wants to do something. There's got to be some kind of system in place to address it. But this right here, everybody watching, you know, and I'm just gonna. I want to watch Rex because you know Rex gonna have his clown suit on. And if they lose two games, Rex really gonna start talking junk. You know, he said a company line, but let them start at 0-2. Rex clown suit gonna be on. Like, you know, if I had Revis, I wouldn't be 0-2. He gonna say something.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
What can we do? When we have the best current league sitting on the sidelines, and we have owners who don't want to pay. You know, and it, you know, and Rex gonna put his clown suit on.
Right.
Oh, he's looking at him right now, like we gonna work this out. But if we go in two, you know, I'm deviating from the company line right now. So. I'm exiting stage left with my clown suit on.
I believe they start out with. I think they start out with Baltimore and New England. So you know, they could start out 0-2.
Yes,
they could easily start out 0-2, but. But again, you know, if you can't just open the, you know, checkbook every time, you know, a young man decides he wants to get paid.
That's right.
You know, and as much as they need him and as much as they, you know, there comes a point where you have to have somebody stand back and say, you got to honor this contract. I don't know how else to put it. You got to honor
this
contract.
See, in the NFL, the contracts ain't even contracts. I mean, I don't even know why they call them contracts because nobody honors them.
Right, it's not even
a contract. Like they got to come up with a new phrase for NFL contract. Like this is like, you know, an agreement, like a nod and a wink. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
simply the reason they shouldn't be signing more than a 3 to 5 year contract. If that and when that player gets to the point where he should get paid like that, pay him. There's nobody denying him, but
see,
they sign these long-term 10-year deals, and the NFL players don't last 10 years. It's
but the problem with honoring the contract, that's why, you know, the owners always, the team always has the high ground on this. Because everybody says you need to honor your contract. But every year the teams don't honor their contract.
Right.
So
Nobody honors their contract.
Every year they cut a guy that they're supposed to pay big money to.
Right, so they got to pay him.
That's right. So
right before the first deadline, they cut him.
Yeah, so
you know, right before the March 1st deadline, they cut him.
They cut him. So is that honoring the contract?
Not at all. I mean, if you look at the money that San Diego kept, you know, by cutting Tomlinson, you know, that's exactly what happened. You know, that's why these young men, you know, sign these honest 3 and 4 year contracts, and see, you know, if your health holds up. What they should be trying to do is work out something for the end of their career, so they can pay for a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, forget about this, you know, this crazy, you know, South Beach money. You might end up in the league for 3 years and then, you know, you got that 15-bedroom house and you get cut.
Ain't no checks coming in to pay for it.
Exactly. Exactly. What they need to do is figure out a way to make sure that these young men are rich for life,
mm-hmm.
and not South Beach rich. You know, it's got to be realistic.
Well, this is gonna be a good thing to watch. To see how it unfolds, because it's gonna have. I mean, this is gonna be a case study for these discussions that, you know, they're gonna have. You know, with owners here when you start to talk about, you know, negotiations and everything else, you know, I think the owners are going to approve with the 18-game schedule here probably at the end of August. So
that's just stupid to me, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's too much.
They just got to realize, like, look, man, y'all got a good thing. Don't get too happy with yourself, man. Mm-hmm. You got a good thing. Like, the 16-game schedule is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, you got 1 week off for most teams. 18 weeks, you get a team that wraps up their division in week 13, week 14. Now you got four more weeks they got to play.
And you're going to get
a bunch of raggedy games at the end of the season.
Right. It plays right into their weaknesses, and that is people get hurt, and they don't know how to work out this money anyway.
Right.
You know, because if you fill that stadium twice more, who gets that money? You know, the contracts that you're used to are going to be changed dramatically. Two more games? That's too much football.
And what they're saying is they have more money to pool. And I think part of it is that, you know, everybody knows the preseason. People believe the preseason isn't working because, and for the NFL, they're basically charging regular season price for admission for, you know, a preseason product. So, you know, they still want to get that money. And the only way they can do it is add the games in. So you caught one way or the other. People are already complaining that these preseason games are too long. Veterans are complaining. So you got to decide on something. And so I think right now they're clearly moving towards the 18 games. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. I agree with you. I mean, I think it's too long. You got injury issues. I think they're going to try to do something with the scheduling. They're already doing that now, where they'll have more divisional games at the end to really try to address the issues around, you know, trying to decrease the likelihood of having people who are running away too quickly. So they're going to try to do things with the scheduling. I mean, the NFL just, you know, they made all the right moves up at this point, so I know people are really kind of working at this. I mean, they're really taking a chance with this. You know, it's about the same thing as the NBA playing two regular season games in England. But, you know, at some point there's a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah, they got to realize ain't nobody going to love this game but us.
Yes.
Yeah. You know.
Ain't nobody going to love this mess but us, man.
The only thing that football is football. I mean,
For real, man. Come on. I get it. You know, the NBA was able to do it, so now they want to do it too. Mm-hmm. And basketball is a little bit different. Basketball has the Olympics as a platform to showcase itself to the world.
Uh-huh.
Ain't no Olympic football, you know. So that's not gonna get the world. That's not gonna get the world geeked up about it. There is Olympic football, but we don't call it that. We call it soccer.
You know, and as much as we just got through the World Cup, and I was excited about that, you know, you aren't gonna find people. You know, ain't gonna be a bunch of Ethiopians happy to see football like we like to see it.
Right. Ethiopians don't care if Brett Favre is coming back.
That's right. You know, ain't a bunch of Italians. Yeah, exactly. Ain't a bunch of Italians hanging out in what's that little town down in Mississippi?
Kiln.
Yeah. Ain't no Italians waiting down in Kiln for Brett to come out and make an announcement.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness. This crew is crazy. So what's been exciting for y'all in the preseason, other than this, you know, with the Revis and stuff, what's intrigued you about the preseason so far?
For me, I'm actually real interested to see how the NFC Central plays out, with Green Bay looking strong, coming back, you know, the defense, another year under Capers. You know, that should bode well for the defense, getting used to the system, getting the right players in the system. And then the offense coming back, hopefully they can take care of the problems they had with keeping Aaron Rodgers upright. But, hell, if even they do at least as good a job as they did last year, he's still bald. So you know, and then however things turned out in Minnesota, that's really a drastic situation. I mean, you go from Favre to Tavares Jackson.
They are holding
you just got a new car, Devon. That's like going from your Benz back to a Taurus, partner.
Right.
That Taurus gonna get you some miles. It's gonna do some things for you, but it ain't a Benz.
They are holding. I think the Central. You know, I'm anxious to see what the Bears look like under March and all of the scheming ways that he seems to, you know, get scores out of those football teams. If he can turn Bolger into a quarterback, I'm anxious to see what he can do with Cutler. I talked to a guy that was down at the Bears camp last week, and he said that, Urlacher looks good. He looks healthy. You know, the Bears, they're going to contend. You know, they're the Bears, and they're going back to smash-mouth football on defense. We'll see. You know, the Packers now, they're playing with their rookie linemen. They're going to give him an opportunity to perhaps start at left guard instead of left tackle. And if you ever got a chance to watch any tape on that young man at Iowa, he's real, and he's a monster. So I think that they are, you know, Green Bay has shored up their some of their line questions. You know, if they can get if they can keep some of them young guys healthy on defense.
When I look about it, I mean, I had a chance to watch and listen as well to some of the Hall of Fame speeches. And Dick LeBeau, I'm excited to see my Steelers. Listening to him talk in that division, just kind of thinking about, you know, with the addition of, you know, Owens and to Cincinnati and, you know, what the Ravens might do, but just, you know, the physical play that's going to be in that division and the talking and, but, you know, listening to Dick LeBeau.
Cincinnati is loaded.
Yeah.
You know, Cincinnati, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, Terrell, but, you know, Carson Palmer got to be smiling like the butcher's dog. You know, they went out and got two receivers. They went out and got two receivers.
Yeah, and people are sleeping on the kid from Oklahoma that they got.
Exactly.
Because if he hadn't blew out his knee, man, he was a top 10 pick.
Oh, yeah, he was.
As a tight end.
You
know, if he had to come out the year before, he would have been a first rounder.
You know, and it's as well as Benson ran last year, and as long as they can establish the run, they're a threat, a legitimate threat. The Steelers are always the Steelers. You know, you can't ever count them out. But when teams stack up like this team is stacked up, it gets very interesting.
And don't forget about Baltimore. I mean, they lost a few corners. You know, Baltimore lost a few corners, but you give Flacco a target like Bolden, like Anquan Bolden, and you still got Derek Mason, who seems to be he seems to defy age. I mean, dude, he's one of those guys who's perfected the craft of catching a football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, dude, at his age, for him to keep going the way he's been going is pretty daggone nice. But with them two, and you got Ray Rice back there. And, you know, the defense is always going to be solid. Again, they lost some corners, and they got to shore up the back end of their defense. But they always going to be tough against the run.
Right.
They always going to play hard. They always going to be motivated. They always going to bring it. So.
Yeah, and this is the year that Harbaugh's got to try and see if he can get these guys over the top. That's something that he's going to, you know, Flacco's a little bit older. Flacco's going to have to take on a little bit more of the load and try and make some plays. But, you know, this is a division that, you know, you're going to have to make some plays. You know, you got Jake in there now, just being in a new environment. So, I mean, you know, people are going to try and put some stuff together. So that's going to be an interesting division. And, I mean, I think, when you look across the NFL, this is some healthy opportunities. I mean, with the 49ers coming back on, changes in Washington. I mean, this is going to be, and we're not even talking about, I mean, we talked all the stuff we talk about, but we still got New Orleans, you know, the Super Bowl champs.
And that's the thing, you know, that's when you can overlook the champs and talk about all these other teams,
yep.
You know, New Orleans didn't do anything to harm themselves.
That's right.
Just as so many other teams did, you know, you look at what Dallas has done, you know, and what they what they're trying to do down there. I mean,
you know, New Orleans actually may have made one of the biggest moves of the offseason, kind of under the radar, when nobody really talked to Reggie Bush about getting back with Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, but now
that may say that man's career.
Yeah. No,
that may say that man's career, because if that man could focus on football, man, and do half of what he did at USC, which they basically erased out there, but that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he could bring some of that to that team, man, that gives that team a totally different dynamic. When he's on, that team is hard to beat.
Yes,
sure, and then because he has so many different. He is such a diverse weapon, you know. There's so many ways that one young man can just hurt you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now that little Kardashian girl is messing with Miles Austin, so you might see him pulling some Terrell Owens type stuff, because he got to get right up in there in that league now, you know. He has to feel a little bit inadequate, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know. Yeah.
If I'm an NFL owner, I'm keeping her away from my facility.
Well, I'm bringing out the tape. Shit. I'm like, how can you know, you ain't got to take that shit. Just watch the tape. Shit.
I'm gonna have. So you gonna show the tape at the rookie orientation?
Yeah, you know. You think about.
This is what you want.
You know, as fine as this looks, you know, this is bruised fruit right here.
Look at it. You can see it.
That's right.
Oh, man.
Bruised fruit.
Speaking of,
you have somebody talk about it, but somebody can just, you know, pull it up on your iPhone and say, look.
There you go right here, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of bruised fruit, as we switch gears a little bit, Tiger Woods. Man, you know, I went out golfing last week, and I thought that was a film of me playing golf, not Tiger. That brother looked just frustrated. He couldn't get off the course. He was just like, I got to endure this. He was like hit from one bunker to the other. I mean, man. And now they're talking about
you know, and that tells you what kind of a mental game golf is, and how you know, not being able to keep your mind on the game can destroy you. I mean, you know, it's Tiger Woods. So when he gets back, when he comes back, and that's what I'd be telling all these young men. You know, yeah, I had a bad tournament. I've had a bad year, but I can still drive better than you. I can still putt better than you. So enjoy what you're getting now. You know, what you're getting is monies that I put on the table for you. Because when I come back, ain't none of you guys winning. For a long time. I'm a young man. My knees are right. You know, enjoy what you're getting now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, the question you got to ask is, do you think he's going to come? Do you think he's going to be able to get right? Because golf is such a mental game. And, you know, I said this before. Tiger Woods, he was invincible. And it's like that first time Superman, somebody draws blood on Superman. They don't believe it, and if Superman don't believe, he bleeds.
Right. But what's going to happen is that he's going to realize, he's a power freak. And he put himself out there and exposed himself. And everybody got to see the king had no clothes. So he's got to get over that. And otherwise, just hang it up. You know, hang it up. But
that's what I got a question. Like, I think he can, but I wouldn't be surprised if he couldn't, because he is such a control freak. And for everyone to know such a huge, embarrassing, dark chunk about his personality, what he can't do is pull that out of people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
But the thing is, you know, he allowed you to, you know, I don't know that Tiger so much as put himself out there like that, as everybody put him out there like that, and he played along with it. If I'm Tiger now, you know, I'm not, you know, I would be like, look, I really don't want to talk about this anymore. She's gone. She took the money and ran. I'm going to raise my children. I'm going to date women from here to hell, you know. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. I'm going to get back on the top of my game. I'm going to get the endorsements that want to follow me, that want to pay me for the ability to play golf like I can. And I'm going to forget all of this media. You know, I'm a hired driver, and you know, I'm just going to play golf. You know, that's if part of the nick on him was the fact that everybody, you know, found out things that they never thought they would find out about him. I would just open up, you know. I'd send my
but
guy out.
But that's what he can't do, and that's been his whole thing, his whole career is he got a yacht called Privacy,
right?
And then this is such an invasion, an intrusion on who he is. He
sure.
is naturally a person who likes to be controlled, and he likes to limit what people know about him. And this was something that got out that he lost control of.
Right.
And
well,
it's probably the first time in his life. He hasn't been in control of his image. He hasn't
sure.
been in control of, like, how he's perceived by people. And
sure.
that, for him, I think is a bit earth-shattering. And being that golf is so mental, like, I think it's bothering him. I think it's bothering him to a point where, again, if he wasn't able to come back from it, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I think one of the things he's going to be doing, it looks like he's going to be getting, the mistake he made, I think, from a golf perspective, is he ran away from everything. So he ran
right.
away from his golf coach, his swing coach. So what he should have done is kept that part of his routine intact. And so one of the things they had Haney on it, I guess I was hearing reports where he said the biggest problem they used to have to correct with him is keeping his head still. And he can tell that he's struggling, and everyone who's worked with him has been around keeping his head still. So having that, even when you're great, you know, having somebody who can make those small corrections and kind of keep you focused, he kind of eroded all of that support. That's part of his control. So he had people around him who kind of just kept him focused, and he's kind of walked away from it and said, I'm going to control everything.
I don't think he tried to control everything. I think he let go of those folks because they all knew his secrets.
Right.
And his wife.
Right,
and
he
places.
Can't handle that.
But I think that's part of the control. Part of it he did to say is, yeah, they knew everything, but what they do know is golf.
Now he can go back and get them. See, I think before he was trying to keep that marriage together, you know. And you can't have the same caddy, you know, that was taking them numbers down for you, because your wife ain't gonna let you do that.
Right.
But if the wife left, see, he shed everything, you know, simply because of you know trying to keep that marriage together.
Mm-hmm.
Now that she's gone, he can pull all of that back.
Yeah,
he needs to go Anakin style. He needs to go Anakin Skywalker and just embrace the dark side. The dark side of the Force can do wonderful things for him if he just would embrace it and stop trying to be, you know, the White Knight Tiger. You know,
sure.
He's got to be Tigger. He's got to be Tigger now.
And let's face it, I mean, he cheated on his wife, okay? He cheated on his wife. And you two and myself are three of the most married people I know, okay? Other than that, look at your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how many aren't married. So, you know, does the rest of the society, are they going to condemn him for the rest of his life? You know, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
People will forgive him for that. He's human. He's human. He enjoyed his celebrity. He got caught up in it. It's time to, you know, it's like you said, just, you know, forget about the White Knight Tiger. Just say, look, I'm just human.
Right. And you know, I think that's the hard part for him, is he's always been invincible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to see that blood and to be like, damn, I am human. I'm human just like everybody else. I mess up, and now everybody knows I mess up.
Sure, but
now
thing,
I don't have, because with Tiger, what one of his biggest assets was he was able to step on a golf course and stare down every other dude there, and they were scared. They was like, oh, snap, Tiger's here, and Tiger's coming for me. Whoever was at the top of the leaderboard going into Sunday afternoon, whenever Tiger went up, they knew he was coming.
Right.
They shook no more. They're not scared like that no more. They're like, oh, Tiger's here. He cheated on his wife.
If Tiger didn't get paid this year, it'd be different. But every tournament he's gone to, he's got paid somehow, some way. You know, if he really had to have the money, I think you'd see him. If Tiger was playing, you know, because the IRS was after him, or, you know, some of these other things, if he really needed the money, I think you'd be looking at Tiger like, oh, yeah, I slept with her. Now watch this. You know, watch this 23-foot up the hill around the corner putt because I need my money. He don't need the money yet. He doesn't need the money yet. And probably it'll be a long time before he really does. He did, you know, it's one of those things. You know, does he have pressure on him? Sure. Because of his reputation, he needs to perform. But is he ever going to be hurt? As long as he shows up at the tournament, somebody's giving him money just to be there. So,
yeah, and I think when they move to with his golf's off season, where he'll have a few months where he can just be away from everything, he's not playing any tournaments, I think that's when he's going to bounce back. You know, I think he'll have a decent run here on the PGA Championship. He'll bounce back. I think, you know, people forget. I keep saying he's had some tough weeks here, but he's finished in the top five in at least two majors. And so he'll have a little time where he can regroup. But that's part of getting a coach, a swing coach. He needs another set of eyes that will allow to correct him and help to manage it. So he doesn't have to think about everything. He needs another set of eyes looking at his swing and working on that kind of stuff.
And somebody just tell him, you know, you got to separate golf from all this other madness.
Yeah.
Separate golf from all this other madness. You know, he's still Tiger Woods. And, yes, he did have surgery, and he came back from his knee and, you know, all of those things. And, you know, he hasn't been as dominant as he once was, but he's still a young man. And, you know, when he comes back, and the thing is, if you know, you have to question him now because right now he's on a losing trend. But if he were to come back after all this adversity, and play the way that he can, what would keep him down? What would you'd have to find him in a crack house somewhere or something, you know, before he could ever, you know, lose this type of poise again.
And that's Sugar Ray type stuff, you know,
when
you lose or you run into something or, you know, or what it might be, you get into a tough fight, you know, now you start looking like, okay, we can make this happen. You know, Lennox Lewis, you get knocked out, come back and knock folks out. I mean, people start to remember you for fighting back. So I think he got more to his chapter right now if he can get together. That's why I was saying everybody, you know, he's not going to be on the same trajectory as Jack and some of these other people just because of the kind of conditioning, the nutrition, and all the other stuff. I think, you know, physically, you know, he'll make adjustments in his game, but with the weightlifting and all the other things that golfers just have never done historically to the level he's doing training, he's got plenty of more good years to make this happen, you know, and get that $750 million back. That he needs to get.
And that really might be the thing that's bothering him, you know. He might have come out of that and just like, you know, I'm sick.
I mean, there's a lot that could be bothering his brother. He got a lot to be bothered about, man.
Because you got to sign.
You got
to sign something with those numbers on it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, I just bought a car. When I signed it, you know, you just kind of go, ooh. You know, when you sign it, but when you got to sign over that much money, it just make you feel like somebody came to your house and just robbed your money.
For real.
You took your money out the safe, and you're like, your safe is open. And he's like, I just can't believe they did it.
And you watched it. You had to watch the robber come in your house.
He actually paid somebody, you know.
You had to leave. You had to open the safe for him. You had the right to put your name on the check.
And, you know, and he's got to blame himself for that because at the end of the day, you should have known better hanging out with Mike and Barkley. You should have known better. You should have hooked up with David Robinson. You know, you should have got together with AC Green.
Hey, he hang out with Tim Duncan. I mean,
Tim Duncan's
wife is like, oh hell no.
Tim
Duncan got to run in the other room when Tiger called.
Yeah.
I got to take this in another room, dear. I'll be back.
You ain't going out attacking no more.
Yeah, he can't even make me call anybody anymore.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's just lonely. Maybe none of his friends' wives are going to let them
hang out with
him. Maybe he calling him Barkley. Barkley like, man, you hot right now, man. You a little too hot in the streets right now. I can't really be seen with you.
That was probably exactly the pressure he was getting from all of those people that were around to begin with. You know, if the caddy was married, you know, his credibility was shot. You know, because he wasn't telling his wife. You know, if his coach was married,
Tiger taking down everybody.
Yeah. You know, Tiger might have had to fire, but they quit. You know, and some of them did quit. You know, some of them did walk out. He's going through a lot right now. I got to let him, you know, kind of deal with this.
Oh, shoot. I know my wife would be like, would you out there in Vegas? I'll hang with Tiger.
You know, that's my boss.
That's it.
I said, it's my boss. What I'm supposed to do.
I'll hang with Tiger like
that. You like this house? You like this cable, this light, this TV? He pays for all of it.
That's right. I was going to ask, recently Van Gundy talked about the Heat, you know, breaking the record for wins and never losing more than two in a row. You know, pendulum's kind of swinging on his team. I mean, what do you guys think about those comments about what he said about the Heat? I mean, he made a point about LeBron. You know, LeBron won 60 games with, you know, subpar talent. You had Bosch. But what do you think about that, and how do you think the rest of the league is viewing those comments?
I think that there's another team that's one scandal away from just blowing up, you know. And they've got a lot of pressure on them to be successful.
Yeah.
Now, should they, with the talent that they've, you know, put around them now, you know, I know when we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, you know, we were skeptical. Some of us, you know, we were skeptical that they could be that superpower. I think they can, and I think they can break some records. But there are some teams, you know, that, you know, the Celtics keep making moves, little bitty silly moves, but moves nonetheless, you know. And, you know, the Lakers are making moves. And they're all looking at this team as the team to beat. You know, they've got a huge target on their back.
Didn't I give you those comments? I feel like he was doing his brother's dirty work. He does that sometimes. I love Jeff Van Gundy. But if you ever watch him commentate an Orlando Magic game, he go extra hard at Dwight Howard. And I do too. Mm-hmm. But it's like your brother coached the team, and you basically kind of parroting what your brother probably is already telling his man. And I think that's what he's doing. I think he's trying to help his brother out by putting even more pressure on his team, because you know Orlando and Miami in the same division.
Yeah,
so they're going to see each other 4, 5, 6 times this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it serves two purposes. You got your coach's brother going out there saying that this team is going to set all these records or whatever. One, that's got to motivate you to be like, come on now. We beat all of those dudes, you know. Mm-hmm. We beat LeBron. We beat D-Wade, Chris Bosh. Everybody's beating him. You know, we beating those dudes. So, as a team, we can hold our own too, and we just need to go out there and prove it. So I think he's trying to give bullet board material and put more pressure on that team. I don't think that team is going to do none of that. That's just me. I don't think that team is going to win 70 games because, one, I mean, they got some old pieces. You ain't going to be able to trot Z out for 25 minutes every night. You ain't going to be able to trot Jaron Howard out for 20 minutes every night. There's going to be chunks of the season where they're unavailable. You know, and those are your two best bigs right now. Other than that, you're rolling out Joel Anthony, and Udonis Haslem. Good luck with those two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So they're going to be, I mean, that's a team that is going to be, and again, you got, on that team, other than Z and LeBron and Chalmers and D-Wade, you only have two guys who've played together before.
Yeah.
So to expect them to have 72-win chemistry in a couple months? To me, that's just silly talk. That's silly talk. To me, those statements had to serve another purpose because they're totally illogical. I get what he was saying about LeBron winning 60-some games with the Cavs and whatnot, but we all know it ain't just about putting people on the court.
Sure, but it took LeBron how many years to play with that talent?
Right, absolutely.
Just to be able to, you know, do that. And this team has to gel, too. That's what's going to have to happen. This team, if it gels, and they keep adding pieces. Will they win 70 games this year? It's unlikely. It's unlikely because what they built this team around were those three players, and the idea that they'll all stay healthy all year is as hard as they're going to have to play and as many minutes as they're going to have to play, it's unlikely. It's unlikely that they can stay as young as they are and as strong as they are. D. Wade has had his problems, and it's unlikely that they'll be able to stay healthy enough to win those kind of games.
And to think that this team is going to make a run to the title, I mean, it's not like they got they went out and got some vets, but it's not like they didn't go out and get a Robert Horry or a James Posey or Derek Fisher, somebody who had been on two or three championship teams before. They got Juwan Howard. They got Big B. I mean, they got vets, but they got guys who haven't really been to the finals a whole lot.
Right. Haven't been successful.
They don't have those winning habits yet. Like, people think, people get caught up in that whole, like you were saying, that Nintendo. You put them all on the team, they're good. That works on Nintendo, you know what I mean? Because the other players on the team don't complain. They don't the video game guys don't complain. You got LeBron on the video game, he don't complain about not getting shots.
Mm-hmm.
D-Wade don't complain about not getting shots. But they don't feel that pressure of a playoff game. When you playing playoffs on a video game, they don't feel it. That's not real pressure. When you get into those real situations and those guys got to make shots that they have never made in their career before, are they going to do it? Are those guys, are those supporting pieces going to be able to step up and make those shots? Because in the game series, a good coach is going to figure out a way to make D-Wade and LeBron and Chris Bosh a little bit less available in those moments.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, when LeBron was walking off the court after a loss, he didn't have to feel so bad. He didn't have to look over to the sideline and see D-Wade. He didn't have to look over there and see Bosh. Because those players literally took money out of his pocket. He could have stayed at home and made big money.
Mm-hmm.
So winning, let them win and they're going to be a very happy team. Let them lose and we'll see how they'll be able to handle the pressure, because it's going to be an elephant on their chest. If they lose three games in a row, they're not going to lose two games in a row. Let them lose three in a row and it's already something somebody said can't be done.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, they got to start questioning a lot of stuff. And it's going to happen.
It's just put more pressure on a team of guys who haven't gone through this together.
Sure.
They haven't faced this pressure together. Like, if you've been a team that's been building up to this moment, like Oklahoma City, they've been building together. Those dudes have been playing together since they got into the league. And so when they hit those moments where there's pressure, they can look at each other and say, let's go. Let's just buckle down. Let's get this taken care of. We learning together, though.
They
don't have that camaraderie yet. They don't have that.
And they don't have that courage. If LeBron gets hurt, I have no doubt Dwayne Wade would step up and still play crazy basketball. Crazy basketball. But let Wade get hurt. And now LeBron and Bosh got to look at each other like, we ain't never really been this far before. Either one of us. Either one of us. So, it's going to be interesting how they stay healthy and how they – and they're going to have to play a lot of minutes. They're going to have to.
And Chris Bosh is the big X factor in this. Like, is he a KG clone or is he Sharif Abdul-Rahim?
Right.
Somebody that put up amazing numbers in Canada where nobody really saw him play and they just saw the numbers and said, well, dude's got to be good. He's getting 20-9, 20-10. He's got to be a good ball player, even though his team sucks. He's got to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually start to watch this dude, and you start to see all his flaws. How is he going to handle that? Because he hasn't been under any media scrutiny his whole career. Because he's been in Toronto. He's been invisible. There haven't been any expectations on Chris Bosh. He's been able to do his thing and kind of slide under the radar and not have the media really dig into him.
How are they going to keep fresh? How are they going to keep these guys fresh and interested? Like you said before, one player that could change his game dramatically is LeBron. LeBron could end up playing point for this team, and he would probably have a ball. He would, he could come out there at any given time and bring the ball up court, make that pass, set that pick, and do things that he's never been able to do before, and stay fresh and stay happy. But if they get into a role and every night, you know, they could reel off 18 wins in a row. But let them reel off three, and they're going to be looking at each other real ugly.
Let me throw something else in that happened. You know, we have the big leprechaun just entered into Boston, and I put something on Facebook about who's a bigger coach killer at this point in their career, T.O. or Shaq. They decimate wherever they land. The coach is getting fired, star player is going. So who's the bigger coach killer? That, so hopefully some folks will give me some feedback on that. But Shaq, can you explain what's happening in Boston?
Sure. You realize the big fella ain't going to come back for half a season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the knee injury that he suffered was tough. Mm-hmm. So load up with a couple big guys. You know, fill the stands. You know, Shaq's not going to, you know, it was sad that Shaq did not make Cleveland a better team. But he's not going to Boston to make them a better team. He's going there with a role to play, and that's it. All Shaq wants to do is wind his career down. And if he can do it with a winner, you know, more power to him. But, you know, I don't think that was a bad signing at all.
They signed both O'Neals, right? We got both O'Neals, right, on Boston.
Right.
And, sure. I mean, I see it. I'm just – and I know he's going to play a bench role. So, I mean, they're not – and he,
right.
And they didn't pay a lot to get him.
No, they got him for a bag of chips. I mean, they ain't paying him nothing. So, you know, I mean, you have to question why he really wants to play. I mean, he truly isn't going to make anywhere near any of the money that he's ever seen before.
He said he won six championships with six teams.
Sure.
But.
I mean, but I'm telling you, he's still the kind of player that when he, you don't ain't going to blink on him on a game seven. You know?
No.
You know, on a game seven, because he'll holler out there, I'm quitting tonight. I'm going to bring it all tonight and go out there and bring it. You know, the one thing about Shaq that always scared me is that if he ever truly tried, who in the hell is going to stop him from doing what he wants to do, even at his age?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really don't want to say that he's never been totally focused, but, you know, I don't know. He has a physical presence that you just can't ignore. And if you find yourself, if they would have had Shaq in game seven this year, that might have been a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
A whole different ballgame, because L.A. attacked in front of the rim, and you can't let a team do that. And Shaq's old school enough that he would have elbowed somebody in the forehead. He would have done something, and that just didn't happen with that Celtics team. They didn't have anybody that would do that. Rasheed couldn't, you know. They would have charged his ass with murder. So I mean, I think it was a great pickup. And I think under the circumstance, under the circumstance with what they're doing down in Miami, it was an even smarter pickup. Because they got to be, you know, they got to be giggling. But I mean, they're attacking Miami at their greatest weakness. Shaq he'll be the best center on the court in that series.
Every other team puts out on the court against Miami at the pivot is going to be better than Miami's centers.
That's right.
I mean, that's going to be Miami's big thing, is how can they cover up the hole in the middle of that team?
That's going to be their struggle against the Lakers.
Against good centers.
Yes, right.
I mean, and you know basketball. You know basketball when you get out there and you're warming up and you're looking on the other end of the court. You know, Paul Pierce ain't giving nothing up to anybody on any given night.
Mm-hmm.
He just won't. I mean, that's LeBron James, yes. The hell with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's Kobe Bryant, the hell with it, you know. Let's go do this. So, I mean, it's some of those teams, like Boston, like L.A., they're not getting shook up about the Heat.
And I mean, Orlando is again, if Dwight Howard can get add a third move to his two post moves, you know, other than dunk and drop step, if he can add another move to that, maybe a hook shot or something, you know, a up fake or something, if he could add another post move or even a 10-foot jumper, Miami ain't gonna be able to do nothing with Orlando.
No, because they fight. They're attacking him at their greatest weakness. They're attacking him right where they, you know, it's that swollen left eye. You can't see it coming. You ain't got nothing for it. You know, as well as you can jab, you're still gonna get beat up.
And for this Miami team, and I know they understand it too, nobody gives a damn what they do in the regular season. I don't care if they do win 72 games.
No.
This team needs to win a championship for me to be impressed. They can win 75 games. If they don't win a championship, they go LeBron again.
Yep.
Can't win it.
Exactly.
Got all the help. Can't win it.
Oh, and it's going to be just awful. It's going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people are going to be just crawling out of the woodwork just to, you know. You know, they'll be showing up at the airport just to laugh at it. You know how fast can be.
Yeah.
You know.
I might.
The other thing, we have a few minutes here, and we talked about this a little bit off the air because we haven't hit baseball much, but was it Robinson or whatever for Cincinnati? We talked about hating St. Louis. And what I liked about this is the professional sports, everybody, because of the age, you know, you don't have many, you know, people aren't free agency and people aren't with teams as much as they are, and guys hang out in the off season and work out. You know, a lot of them all live in Florida, or they live in Arizona, or they live in L.A., and so they know each other in the off season. You don't ever hear any, they don't really go after each other, like, I dislike you. And I really appreciate it. It's kind of a throwback, even though he went 0-for-5. But he was like, why did you play against the Cubs? And he's like, he came back and said, because I hate them. And he called them everything in the world because, like, they whine. But I had an appreciation for his position. And it's a throwback that we hardly ever see. And most leagues are trying to keep it from happening. But I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that and maybe comment quickly on it.
I love it. I hope that's what this Miami team in the NBA brings to the league, is that you have – more teams just like pissed off and angry and mad at each other.
Sure, but then, you know, that whole baseball thing that started at the All Star game with Joey Votto. Joey Votto made his first All Star team, and Pujols, I think it was Pujols that did something, and everybody got up and clapped, and they panned on Joey Votto, and he was just looking around like, the hell with that, the hell with that. I hate them. He's on my team today, but I hate them. I don't give a damn what they do. Here, Joey Votto, he's the first. He made his first All-Star team, you know, and he's like, "Oh hell no, I ain't patting him on the back. Yeah, I ain't shaking his hand. You know, it was a good play. Nobody denying that, but it ain't like we going to dinner. I hate him." I hate him. and there's there's more of it in the league, but you like the ones that just come out and say it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that Larry Bird told Danny Ainge, you know, he yelled at Danny Ainge, Danny knocked somebody down, he went over to give him a hand, and Bird was like, you don't help him up. You don't help him up. You knock him down. Let him lay down.
He'll be all right.
Yeah.
You didn't kill him.
You don't have to be nice about it. You over there apologizing. You got the ball.
Well, any final words here, gentlemen, before we wrap it up?
Well, I'm waiting for the Brett Favre watch. You know, I'm waiting for him to really make an announcement. Mm-hmm. It's got to come any day now. I don't think he can wait, you know. I think that, you know, you got to get some timing in camp. He can't just stay out all the camp. And if he did, you know, you'd love to see Minnesota go, now, we're okay. We don't need you. You know,
yeah.
You stayed out all training camp. I don't want you around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm waiting on Floyd Mayweather to get some courage and fight Pacquiao. That's what I'm gonna hit on next week.
That's it. We'll talk about that. Well, everybody, until next week. Check it out on Facebook. We'll see you next week from Beijing or Shanghai, wherever I'll be in China.
Daddy was like, whatever you do, don't let it be that daily. Professional AUG, man. And Joe John, bro. Chicago should not spend that cap money. You know, they've been talking about Ronda came to Boston. You know, thinking he knew it all. You know, Chicago.